Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment. Your time to shine. Your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Body Bags with Joseph Scott Morgan. I, by no stretch of the imagination, am a historian. Actually, I think I'm kind of a frustrated historian. I'm somebody that kind of romanticized the idea about becoming one at some point in time. Perhaps saw myself in a book-filled office at a university somewhere. But then I realized those jobs are really hard to come by. The rigor that you have to go through in order to achieve doctoral status in the field. And the competition, oh my gosh, it's difficult to say the very least. And then I knew that I didn't know that I would even be able to keep the lights on in whatever home I was living in. But that doesn't mean that I'm not fascinated. And I have followed history my entire life. It's just something I do. Most people, and here's another little slice of life from me, from behind the curtains. People will say, hey, Joe Scott, what true crime shows do you watch? And I smile a knowing smile and look at them and say, I don't. You know what? I spend most of my time watching history videos on YouTube. Matter of fact, you could probably turn the television off in my house. I don't really watch it. But there are those pivotal moments in any country's history that kind of dictate the course of the way things are going to go. And I've got to say, we're going to talk about one such event today that altered the direction of the history of our nation in a way that I don't know that even now we can take the full measure of. We will be able to someday. But this event impacted us almost like a bullet being fired from a pistol. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and this is Body Bags. Dave Mac, I want to say something to you right now. I've been around events, I think, in the course of my life where you had one person that was kind of the focus of something going on in a large group, and they didn't exactly behave or react in the way that they should have, maybe respond. And they were accused afterwards of not being able to read, quote unquote, read the room. And in my opinion, if we had a king of the hill, I think that it would probably be, in our nation's history, probably be John Wilkes Booth. He failed to read the proverbial room, and it wound up culminating in a catastrophe for a country that was coming out of war, and for a region of the country, the South in particular, that knew that they were dependent upon some level of mercy and to have any hope of recovering after the Civil War. And that was dashed. It was completely dashed by his actions that he took in Ford's Theater that April night so many years ago when he killed President Lincoln.
The amazing part, Joe, is that you nailed it right off the bat. He did not read the room right. He thought he'd be a hero. He absolutely thought by killing President Abraham Lincoln that all he had to do was get across the Potomac River, get back towards the South, and they would build statues about this guy. He really believed that he was the man. But he was 26 years old and had been kind of jacked up in his thinking for a long time. Was a famous entertainer in terms of a stage actor at the time. He and his brother were both famous actors of their time.
I think his dad even surpassed them. His dad was known as this incredible Shakespearean actor.
Wow.
They held a position of celebrity, Dave, that, you know, you can't necessarily compare that age with the current age
right.
We're in, but I don't know. I mean, you're talking about serious actors here, and they were known.
Right.
I mean, they were known everywhere. I think they were even known in Europe at that point in time. Right.
And interestingly, his brother, Edwin Booth, actually, and this could be one of those apocryphal stories, but I believed it to be true, is that Edwin Booth saved Tad Lincoln when he was getting, or one of the Lincoln children
Robert,
that was falling.
Robert, yeah.
It, Robert, it, okay.
It's not apocryphal.
Oh,
dude.
It's not.
He
it's actually real.
Saved him at a train station.
Right.
He was going to, you know, I don't know if he fell down into the well, you know, mm-hmm. where the train track is or whatever.
Right.
He saved him. What are the odds? You know, and there's all these little oddities, you know, that people have done the comparison between Kennedy and Lincoln.
Oh, my
you
word.
You know, all of these years, you know, and talked about it. And some of them are very sketchy at best.
Yeah.
You know, you're having to do the linkage here. Yeah. And let's see, what was the thing? Hang on. The one that, let's see, it was Kennedy's assassin, allegedly Lee Harvey Oswald, had shot the president from a warehouse and fled to a theater. And Booth wound up shooting President Lincoln in a theater and winds up fleeing to, they want to call it a warehouse. It's not a warehouse. It's a barn.
A barn.
I think it's like a tobacco barn.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of dig into those sorts of things.
It's like numerology. You can make it do anything. You know?
You can make it do anything. Yeah.
And it's fascinating to do, and it's entertaining. But that's why I said, I don't even know if it's apocryphal or true, you know, but there are so many things surrounding the assassination of President Lincoln, what took place afterwards, and John Wilkes Booth and him misreading what was happening. So today we're going to get into, and I did not even know this at all until you mentioned it to me. I didn't know they did an autopsy of John Wilkes Booth. I don't know what I was thinking. It just never occurred to me. Certainly you're going to do an autopsy on the president, as we covered that last year.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, Dave, I don't know if you're aware of this. Did you know that that wound up being one of our most popular episodes last year when we covered the assassination, but right. actually the autopsy of President Lincoln. And I thought that it was fitting.
Yeah.
You know, that we go back and talk about Booth, you know, who brought all of this about. And
especially
his story is fascinating.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Now that I've looked at it, I'm like, wow, I had no idea. So to give you the quick thumbnail, he did think he would be a hero and he wasn't. To the South.
Right,
you read it right, you know, because people were looking ahead of what can we expect, what's going to take place now. And he really did just train wreck all of that. But after this, I have a question for you starting right off at the beginning. Most of us know that John Wilkes Booth snuck into Lincoln's booth at Ford's Theater, shot him from behind, and then leapt to the stage about 12 feet down, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Did John Wilkes Booth break his leg?
Yes.
When he jumped. Okay.
Yeah. And here's kind of the dynamic of it. And it's fascinating. When he leapt over the balcony where, you know, Major Rathbone and his fiancee and the president and, of course, Mary Lincoln were seated, he kind of pushed back. Of course, before he leapt, after he had, and people lose sight of this, when he shot President Lincoln, he was using, it was a 50 plus caliber. I think it's like a 54 caliber Derringer. That means it's a muzzle loading pistol. You got one shot, and he buried that in Lincoln's skull. The other thing that they don't think about before Booth exits this balcony, is that he pulled out a really big knife and he slashed Major Rathbone. Cut him up pretty good, you know, because Rathbone was trying to thwart Booth. And you can imagine, I mean, who's going to be sitting there and suddenly, hear this report of this weapon going off. And these things are loud. I've actually heard.
I was going to ask you, because the muzzle loading, it's different than the guns we think of as a pistol, and the sound and the smoke, it's a lot different.
Yeah, and it's a black powder weapon, so you'll get this very generous cloud of smoke that comes along with it. And just to kind of bring this into focus, the weapons that the military was using, the soldiers on both sides, these are black powder weapons. And you know how you see them lined up, you mm-hmm. know, in a line of battle facing one another, almost right. like Napoleon? they were using antiquated tactics with essentially modern weapons. They had rifled weapons at that point in time. But anyway, because of the powder, there are reports that were saying after the first one or two volleys that were fired, the battlefield's almost like completely obscured by smoke.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You've got this tiny space, which I've actually been to there in Ford's Theater, and it's not huge. Now, I'm not saying that the entirety of your field of view is going to be occluded right. by the smoke, but it's going to be, you've got the report, and it's a concussive sound that reaches out. You've got Mary Lincoln scream. That's the right. first thing you hear almost immediately after the weapon goes off. And then Rathbone, who is obviously a war veteran, he knows what gunfire sounded. Everybody back then, you didn't have to be a right. veteran. Everybody knew what gunfire sounded like. He responds, and he's probably stunned for a second. And it was just enough time for Booth to free up that weapon, that knife, and he slashed Rathbone. But as he did that, he was trying to make his escape. President Lincoln's security was either in a bar drunk or he was asleep,
right.
one of the two. And he turned out to be a total train wreck later mm-hmm. on in life. He was caught drinking on the job and all sorts of things. Why in the world they would trust the life of the president in? And you can't yeah. make the excuse and say, oh, well, it was different times. No, people, there were assassins. There have been assassins for generations. You're just coming. You're still on a war footing, and you're going
right.
to let the president be in that. But anyway, when Booth jumped over that balcony, they have the bunting, which is, you know, that kind of curved decorative, attachment that's on the front of the booth. And it's, you know, they've portrayed it as being kind of in red, white, and blue.
Right.
Well, this goes to premeditation, something we talk about, you know, in investigations all the time. Booth had his horse waiting in the alley. Matter of fact, he had a stable boy out there that was hanging on to this horse. It was saddled. He was ready to rock and roll.
And he knew he was going to have to get out in a hurry.
He did. He had his spurs on.
Right.
And so what happened was that when he jumped, leapt, his spur got caught on that bunting, and it fractured his leg, and it was a very nasty fracture. And you know, some have said that, you know, you could bear witness to the idea that he's kind of limping off of the stage. It was actually his left leg and foot, and so it was a fracture. You have these parallel long bones in your lower leg. You've got the tib fib. Well, it was his fibula that was actually fractured. Can you imagine how painful this was? Fractured right above the foot, and it snapped it. So he's, I know it makes my teeth hurt. So he's dragging his foot, you know, dragging his leg behind him. And some people say, you know, they're not really sure what he said. One is kind of the Virginia motto that's in Latin,
right?
Death be it always to tyrants or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. Or the South is avenged. No one. And there was total chaos in the event. And of course, people aren't watching Booth at this point. Where are they watching? They're actually looking up at the balcony where the president had been. And here's the thing. Mary Lincoln, as you can imagine, it's his wife. She's screaming. And people knew he was up there in the audience because, did you know the play?
American Cousin?
Yeah. He got there late, and they stopped the play, Dave. The band or the orchestra that's in, literally had an orchestra pit in front of the stage, they started playing Hail to the Chief.
Oh, wow.
And the actors that were on stage turned immediately and faced the balcony as they're entering. And even the actors on stage are applauding. So there's an awareness that the president and his wife and their entourage has arrived.
I've never heard that before.
Here's the thing, Dave. You know how we mentioned that John Wilkes Booth was a luminary in theater back then? Even though he makes this grand statement on stage and eyes are then turned to the president and his wife screaming out, the crowd and those in the crowd, the theater crowd, had seen Booth perform before. They knew him. They could recognize him by face. He was for those days, a very handsome dude. And they knew right at that moment in time that one of the most famous actors in the world had just murdered our president. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and a big shout out to Astepro for sponsoring this episode and providing free samples. I live in an area where allergies are a day-to-day issue, and finding an over-the-counter option for relief is like the Holy Grail. I use Astepro, and I strongly recommend you give it a try. Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray, and it's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays can take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can Astepro and go today. AstaproAllergy.com. Astepro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Years ago, when I got out of my field full-time, I was diagnosed with PTSD. I had sleep disorder. I had depression. And for me, I had to turn to someone to talk to, somebody that could aid me along the path to healing, to restore me to that person that maybe I was at one point in time, to make me better for not just myself, but my family. If you're thinking about therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You can do this anytime that you like. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/bags today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com. That's Better, HELP.com/bags.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dave, I got to ask you, brother, I can't imagine us being in this position. What if you know that all hell is about to rain down on you? Can you imagine, it's all real, I guess in his mind, very romanticized. He's an actor. That he's going to draw all these people into him. They're going to follow him and, essentially canonize him in Sal.
Right.
When the reality, the sting of that broken leg is hitting home and he's having to drag that thing behind him out of that theater and try to get it just to get up on that horse, put your foot in the stirrup and throw your leg over it. You imagine where his mind is at this point. I wonder if he had that sudden recollection or that sudden epiphanal moment where he said, maybe this wasn't the best idea.
I'm wondering, because of what all was happening, he's in the booth. I picture him screaming, "Hey y'all, watch this." That's what I picture him doing before, but he jumps and breaks his leg. And as you mentioned, a gruesome injury. Now he stands up, he holds the dagger above his head from the stage and blood is dripping from it because he stuck it in, Rathbone. And so can you imagine the horror of that? You got the shot, you got the smoke, the president's down, there's chaos reigning, and you got this actor, world famous, he's standing on the stage in triumph, holding the dagger over his head. They see blood dripping and then he takes off. Now,
let me pause you right there and go back to one theater reference here that I think is fascinating. It's one of the reasons I mentioned his father and his brother as well. I think his brother was like really, really, very well known. That image of him standing on the stage holding the dagger in his hand, that literally goes back to another case that you and I have covered, because these guys are Shakespearean actors. I think the brother had gained great renown in playing Brutus, or maybe it was Wilkes. I can't remember which one, but they had played, they were both in Shakespeare's play, Julius Caesar. And so that theatrical move of holding the knife in their hand, and you painted this picture, and I hadn't thought about that, of blood perhaps, kind of seeping down that blade and dripping onto the stage. And maybe no one could appreciate it, but what's important here is that Booth appreciated it from the sense that this is the ultimate in theater. And I think little did he know, this is the last time he's going to appear on stage, period.
Right. it's so weird that he thought in his mind of mind that, you know, they thought they were overthrowing the government. He also didn't know that the conspiracy to overthrow the government was him, that everybody else had failed at their duty that night, pretty much. And the conspiracy that, you know, they were not just after killing the president. It was a plan to take out the working aspects of the United States government. And as he gets out there to his horse, you mentioned that he had a guy holding the horse. How does he get on that? I mean, it's not easy to get on a horse with both legs working properly. Regardless of adrenaline, he's now outside, and you mentioned the pain. It's got to be horrible, and I'm just wondering, he has to get help. But every time he's riding that horse now, the pain
bouncing up and down. He's got his spurs on, so you know he's ready to roll. And he's, for those of y'all that have never ridden a horse, you know, if you're saddled up, your feet are, they fit into the stirrups that hang down. You know, a lot of people understand this, but let's just try to get an idea of the biomechanics that are going on here.
Because like
Dave, you make
absorber.
an excellent point. Yeah, it's like a shock absorber, but let's just pretend that shock absorber, the leg is now kind of that piston that's inside of the shock absorber, and that thing is fractured. It's not going anywhere. Well, if it does, every time, you know, you hit that horse, takes a step, and trust me, he's not trotting. Right. He's got this thing, you know, he's going, you know, he's put the spurs to it, as they say, hell bent for leather, you know, and he's riding, and every time that horse bounces along the way, that pain is shooting up the leg. Now, yeah, he's going to have a huge burst of adrenaline, but those broken and fractured bones within his leg are, first off, there's a high probability they didn't have an x-ray to do this with back then. This is merely my, you know, projection here. There's a high probability that this bone has ripped through the adjacent muscle structure in his the lateral aspects of his leg. I don't know about the calf, but it probably fragmented as well. And so you've got little fragments of bone in there that are bouncing around. And every time that horse, you know, jostles about, he's going to feel it, and it's going to be excruciating. And you talk about a cold cup of coffee. All of a sudden, he has an awareness now that he ain't, you know, he's no longer, you know, with his play pretties up on the stage. This is reality. You know, he's into it now. He's into it, and I'm sure he's probably having second thoughts. And his conspirator is waiting with him. And, you know, there was a whole gang of these people that, you know, that he was involved with, that he had come together. And, you know, most of these people are, they're real dolts to begin with. You know, they're not the brightest among us. And just on like a little aside, you know, one of these, I think, had gone to Secretary Seward's house at the same time Booth was in Ford's theater, slashed him about, and he had had a neck injury, and he had a neck brace around his neck. So the only thing that kept him from having his throat cut, and when the guy ran out into the street, he starts crying, murder, murder, murder. He's like out of his mind at this point in time. You've got a couple of guys that, or one at least, that turned into a real coward and couldn't go forward because they had planned to kill everybody there. There was actually a plan that General Grant,
He was supposed to be there
with Lincoln, and because Grant's wife allegedly couldn't stand Mary Lincoln, they were like, I think we'll go. He made his excuses and left. But, you know, here you have Booth riding off into the night, Dave, and to parts unknown, maybe to us, but I think he had an idea where he was headed.
He was trying. You know, they did have a plan, and it was to get to the Naval Bridge. They got to get to the Navy shipyard, and that's where David Harold is waiting. But as he gets there, this is the little things you didn't plan on. You know, it wasn't like it is today where communication happens, you know, in right away. And so as John Wilkes Booth is making his escape, he gets to a bridge that has been closed for the night. Done. Not going anywhere. And it's the Navy Yard Bridge. And John Wilkes Booth, now we're going back to the famous actor thing. The guys guarding the bridge haven't heard about the assassination that just took place. And John Wilkes Booth needs to cross the bridge. And they stop him, and he talks his way into it. Because famous actor, hey, just got to get through here, guys. And they're like, oh, okay. So yeah, he is able to cross the bridge, and that's where he meets up with David Harold. And now those two are going to be married at the hip for the next few days, till death do us part almost. And that's where their journey begins. Now, Booth thought, all we have to do, get across the Potomac River. And once we're there, we're in God's country. We're in Dixie. We're home free. There'll be parades waiting for us, you know? Didn't happen that way.
No, it didn't. And, you know, the thing about it is, I think a lot of people, many people think, you know, they'll think of my home state of Louisiana when you think swamp. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something.
Oh,
Virginia and down in North Carolina and of course, South Carolina too, that whole area right there, you're in that tidal basin. And let me tell you something. There's a lot of rough terrain in there. Matter of fact, I think the one area there in Virginia, I think they call it, and here's the name, the Dismal Swamp. Can you imagine? I think that's a place I would want to avoid. But, you know, that's the terrain that Booth and Harold found themselves trying to negotiate. And not only are they trying to negotiate it, they're trying to negotiate it with a busted leg.
At night
with a leg that is just ripping in pain. It's torn through the musculature in his leg, and it's horrible. And you can imagine how excruciating this was, just to try to just any movement. There's a reason why, even if your leg is not set, if you have a fractured limb, they tell you you need to rest, stay off of it, or in case of an arm, don't use it. And you talk about the antithesis of that, boy, is he using it or what?
Ride a horse.
You know, because this is uneven terrain. When you get off into the swamps, you're not going to be on the back of a horse. Yeah. You have to negotiate this area and find somebody that can help you through it. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was actually a former slave that, not knowing what was going on, he had to act as a guide to get them through this swamp.
It's funny because I was going to ask you about the leg break, Joe. Funny, strange. Is it possible for a broken leg to be fatal?
Yeah. And there's a couple of ways it could be. First off, if that leg fractures and you clip a major vessel in there,
right,
or a couple of vessels, you can bleed out. That is possible. With these fractures, what happens is you can have this infection that sets in, and it necrotizes, essentially. It means it dies. You know, it's where we get the term, you know, necros. We're talking about death, and the tissues begin to die and rot in that area. So the longer you go and this thing remains untreated, depending upon how much damage is done, you can, and it would take quite a bit of time, but you're going to see like an onset of fever. You're going to see kind of a delirious state, and then the leg will literally start to turn black, and it would eventually have to be amputated. That is, if you cannot get to a doctor and have this thing set and wrapped. And Dave, I got to tell you, interestingly enough, another interesting intersection with history. The physician involved in this thing is actually an ancestor, somebody that you and I grew up listening to when we were kids.
How weird. It is so weird.
It really is.
Oftentimes, he gets listed in the group of conspirators. And we're talking about Samuel Mudd.
Yeah.
In this particular case, John Wilkes Booth with the broken leg, him, David Harold, they're now on their way, trying to escape together. And they go to a bar, Surrattville. There's a Surratt Tavern. They've changed the name of that now, but I always think of Mary Surratt, you know,
being
hung as part of the conspiracy, because that's where they actually created it. But anyway, so they're at the tavern, and John Wilkes Booth brags to the bartender that he just killed Abraham Lincoln. Now, you're trying to escape. I don't think telling people this is a good thing, but
probably,
hey, it's John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah.
But he and David Harold leave there because they know they got to get the leg treated. He knows that Samuel Mudd, Dr. Mudd, is in the area, and he goes to Dr. Mudd's house and gets him to set the leg. There is a lot of different stories told about whether or not Mudd was involved in a conspiracy, if he was on the side of Booth or whatever. The one thing that has been said is that Mudd, Dr. Samuel Mudd, did know John Wilkes Booth from a conspiracy they had to kidnap the president a year before. I don't even know if that's true. It's just part of our lore.
It's hard. It's really hard to validate that. Yeah. And I know what's, you know, and what I was mentioning is that Samuel Mudd was the great grandfather of Roger Mudd. And when you and I were kids, Roger Mudd was on the nightly news every night.
Oh,
you know, you're sitting there and yeah. I mean, how many times as kids did we watch him? Yep.
The one thing that comes to mind with him for me, politics, because he was a political reporter, you know, for years. And it was Roger Mudd. Think about, we were talking about the different connections between the Kennedy assassination and the Lincoln assassination. And in this particular case where Samuel Mudd fixed the leg of John Wilkes Booth during his escape, Roger Mudd is talking to John to Teddy Kennedy right before in 1979. It happened on November 4th, 1979. They have this interview on national television. They're hoping Ted Kennedy will announce that he is running for the Democratic nomination for president, even though Jimmy Carter is a Democrat and he's the incumbent. And at that time, polling showed that Ted Kennedy was favored 2-1 over Jimmy Carter and in his party. So this is, they were hoping he would announce it on national television with Roger Mudd. He didn't. He announced it a couple of days later. But there was a question that Roger Mudd asked that night in front of a nationwide audience. He asks Ted Kennedy, why do you want to be president? Ted Kennedy couldn't answer it. His campaign ended that night before it ever began. He never regained his footing. He did not win the nomination. Carter got the nomination and lost in a landslide to Reagan. But his campaign ended with that one question from Roger Mudd.
Isn't that amazing the way history kind of entangles itself like this? It's fascinating to look back. And look, I want to give Dr. Mudd his due real quick. Mm-hmm. And it's important to remember this. And I'm trying not to bury the lead here, but Dr. Samuel Mudd was eventually arrested. He was charged, I think, as a conspirator, probably relative to treason. He was actually sent to, if you can imagine how hellacious this would have been, actually sent to an army prison in Florida.
Yeah.
You imagine how hot that was? Well, what did they have? They had a fever outbreak that occurred down there. And, you know, he distinguished himself while he was there. And he begins to treat everybody. Guards, he treats family members, he treats prisoners, and tries to pull them back from the edge. And, you know, whether or not Mudd himself was actually involved, and I'm talking about Dr. Samuel Mudd, as part of a conspiracy, I don't know. But again, it goes back to this idea that things aren't always as they seem.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So the powers that be, primarily Stanton, back in Washington. Stanton was the Secretary of War. I believe that's correct. They're frustrated because they haven't found Booth. And they're, as they say, they're curry combing the landscape out there trying to find him. And they've got, they've actually got military detachments. These soldiers that are assigned to these troopers, it's not like they're seasoned veterans. These guys have stared down war. They've been through just hell, you know, over low these many years since the war broke out. And they had cavalry units that were out searching and looking for Booth and anybody else that could have been, linked to him. But this is what they wanted, Dave. They didn't want to have a hide that they could tack to the wall. They wanted this guy alive.
Yes.
They wanted him alive because they wanted to try to understand what had happened. They wanted him, I think, to stand up before court and have to stand and deliver, say what he did, and maybe point to anybody else, any of the peripherals. But, unfortunately, the country was not going to get that satisfaction.
You know, it's interesting, Joe, that the John Wilkes Booth kills Lincoln. And then as he's on his run, he and David Harold, they get the leg set at Dr. Mudd's house. Dr. Mudd kicks them out. They're trying to find another Confederate guy, and it's at night. They're having trouble finding him, and they stumble upon the house of Oswald Swan, who is a free black man. He's got a cabin, and so he doesn't know what's happened with Lincoln. He doesn't know. He just got two guys. They need help, and so he really wasn't given a lot of opportunity to say no, but he did lead them to the home of the Confederate that they were looking for. The guy's name is escaping me. It was a Cox plantation. That they were trying to find. They pay the man. John Wilkes Booth, David Harold, Booth kills the president, kills Lincoln, and ends up paying a black man $12 to lead them to their Confederate. They end up, this happens another time too with the Lucas family. During this time they're on the run, nobody will help them. John Wilkes Booth is getting mad every step along the way where he expected to be treated like a hero. They had all these Confederates, people that were spread out throughout the area that, they all talked about helping. We'll be there for you, whatever you need. But then when he needs their help, all they're doing is giving him food and saying, go, not giving him money, not giving him just here's some food, leave.
Yeah, but you can imagine what these people had seen.
Oh, my gosh.
They've seen these troopers on horses,
yes,
hell bent for leather. And they're yelling and they're screaming and they're showing up at barns and homes. And, I'm not sure, but I think that it was still in place. Lincoln had suspended habeas corpus.
Right.
And so what that means is, dude, you ain't got no rights. If we're looking for somebody, we're coming in your house.
Yep.
And people are terrified and they understand that they're in a defeated state now, the Confederacy. Whether or not you were aligned with the Confederacy in this region or not, and you were just living your life as would be, they knew that, well, first off, the Union's blood was boiling. There were people back in D.C. They did, in fact, want blood. They wanted Booth's head on a pike.
Yep.
And news, I know that they didn't live in the world that we live in with the quick turnaround on news. Trust me. The word had gone out at this point in time, and word would travel fast between these farms. I can only imagine.
Oh yeah.
And they knew that if they're caught with this guy, it was going to be curtains for them.
And so that's where these people who had been sympathizers all along now are saying, here's some food, leave. They were making him get off my property. You cannot stay here. And so he ends up at the home of a black family, the Lucas family. And Booth was mad because all these people he thought were going to provide help, nobody's helping. And he's at the end of the day, he's got no place to sleep. He's hungry. And he ends up at the home of William Lucas, who is a freed slave. He's a black man. He got his family there in his own cabin. And Booth, showing he's so grateful, he grabs a knife, threatens Mr. Lucas and his family, and kicks them out of their own house and sleeps in their house that night. And anyway, so for the next that pretty much winds up the running of John Wilkes Booth. You know, as we know, he ends up in a barn. And this is where they were told, we want him alive. Do not shoot this man. Do not kill this man. We need to take him alive. And when it comes right down to it, Joe, he's hiding out in a tobacco barn with David Harrell. They're surrounded by guns, weapons, military, police. Everybody that, you know, wanted to get John Wilkes Booth was there. And he won't come out. And so they decide to light the cabin on fire, the tobacco barn. They go to light the tobacco barn on fire. David Harrell runs out. All the while, John Wilkes Booth is calling him a coward. But what happens next is exactly what they didn't want to have happen. John Wilkes Booth gets shot. One shot.
And that's all it took. And it was actually fired. Well, first off, interesting things. First off, let's talk about the guy that shot him.
Yeah.
You know how they talk about stars are converging in the heavens? Well, you got two nut jobs that are essentially converging on one spot, okay? Boston Corbett was the name of the trooper that shot him. And they were, you know, these troops were under direct orders, you know, under penalty of court-martial to not shoot John Wilkes Booth. Now, they had fired what they call fired the barn. The thing had gotten set on fire, and they were going to try to flush him out. He was refusing to come out. And if you've ever, you know, I love our area of the country. And if you, particularly as you start to head up through the Piedmont, you know, heading northeast, and you're going through North Carolina and Virginia, and you see these old tobacco barns, the really old ones. I'm not talking about modern ones. And you can see those beautiful pieces of wood that are seasoned on the outside. Mm-hmm. And there's gaps in between those slats. And this would have been the case up there in Virginia as well. You can see what's going on inside that barn. And so Boston Corbett had positioned himself with what's referred to as a Colt's Dragoon. And it is a...
What is a Colt's Dragoon?
Colt's Dragoon. Okay. And Dragoons were... the name Dragoon actually had to do with cavalry mounts. And these pistols were so big that you could wear it in your belt, but many of these guys kept these in holsters on their saddle, and some of them would carry two, and they're big, they're really big. And it's a muzzle. It's like a muzzle loading. You can actually take the cylinder out and load it individually. And so Corbett has the opportunity to sit there and watch Booth. Okay, he's got this great shooting position that he's in, and he pops off one round, and it clips Booth in his cervical spine. Of course, they have to evacuate him out. But back to Corbett, what makes him so...
Because the barn's on fire.
Barn's on fire, yeah, and he knows it. And, you know, I think Corbett, going back, he is... To say that he is a religious zealot is probably an insult to religious zealots. He he was born in London, and the thing about it is, he from an early on in his life, he was exposed to mercury fumes. Oh. Probably around, you know, and that's where the term Mad Hatter comes from.
Yeah.
You know, because mercury was used. And so he had displayed all kinds of psychoses, you know, throughout his life. So much so, Dave, are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? As if this story couldn't get any more bizarre. Boston Corbett self-castrated himself. He had taken his testicles off so that he could remain focused on God and God's work. And in his world, God's work was abolition. And that was his primary focus in life. And so this, you know, interestingly enough, he struck a blow, I think, probably at least in his own mind, that this was going to be a great big fat giant red exclamation point on everything, you know. And he had that one, and I don't think that he cared if he was going to swing from a sour apple tree or not,
right?
You know, if they were going to tie a rope around his neck. And of course, I think that some people probably viewed him as a hero, and that's right. That's what he wanted. But yeah, you know, when they drag Booth out, he's still alive, and he lives, Dave, I think for 2 to 3 hours, and the troopers are all gathered around him, and his last request before he dies is he asks to see his hands, and they hold his hands up to him, because, you know, we're talking about an insult that's like C4, C5, C6. First off, it's hard to believe that he survived that long with that kind of injury, because he's got a ball that's passing through there, a lead ball that's passing through there. It clips the spinal cord. And, you know, as you know, the closer you get to the brain with damage to the spinal cord, there's a less likelihood that you're going to survive this, because, you know, you're starting to get into all these functions that require these neurons to be firing all of the time. But he survived for that. And I think like his last words were something along the line of useless. And then he dies.
Wow.
But the question then becomes, how do we validate this? And back then they didn't have DNA. Heck, they didn't even have fingerprints, Dave. I mean, the ancient
what?
Chinese. Yeah. I mean, fingerprints. We were leaving fingerprints back then, but they were not being used for identification. Okay.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. That's something that would not come along until, I don't know, Sir Henry developed it, you know, in India, where he had the Henry system. And so it was not something that was recognized. So you had to have people visually, you know, identify. And you're talking about a body that's unpreserved. And why is it important? Well, out of all the cases, Dave, from a medical legal perspective and a homicide like this, if you're in a political position, you have to assure the public that this is, in fact, John Wilkes Booth. He's
right.
Dead. He is dead. We can validate that. And so what winds up happening is that they wrap his body up and, you know, throw him on the back of a horse. You know, we've seen, you've seen Western movies, you know, where the bounty hunter will go out and, you know, bring a body in, you know, to,
right.
And I don't know, there were probably other mediums of transportation for them at that point in time, but along the way, but initially they rode off with his body wrapped up in an army blanket. And they had to get him somewhere, you know, they were being directed by Stanton at this point in time. And I don't think that people really understand how powerful Stanton was. He was, for these people, he was Lord Almighty on earth.
Mm-hmm.
He controlled the military. He was the Secretary of War, as they called it back then. And he laid down the law, and that's what they wanted. And that's what was going to have to happen. So they wind up taking Booth's body to, of all things, a gunboat that was, you know, anchored out in the river, and took him out there. And they actually did an autopsy on John Wilkes Booth's body on the deck of this gunboat. And before they did that, they had several people that they knew that knew Booth, and they brought them on board and showed the face.
They had to get that visual ID, didn't they? I mean,
they had to, because it was essential. You had to have it, because there would always be questions. I mean, think about all the, you know, all of the kind of these comments that are made now about people.
Elvis ain't dead.
Tenfold hats.
Yeah. We never walked on the moon. Elvis ain't dead.
All this stuff.
You ain't going crazy. It's all in your head.
Yeah, it's a flat earth. Those sorts of things. And so, you know, they understood this. I think they may have understood it better than we did.
Yeah.
You know, and what was kind of interesting was that Booth, for this particular time, he actually had a tattoo.
I know.
Which I found fascinating, and it was his initials. It was JB, you know, and of course they were able to identify his body vis-a-vis that. But you know, these surgeons are out there, and I've actually assisted with autopsies in an outdoor situation where we had multiple deaths. It's hot, you're dealing with flies, and most of the time you're going to have a number of people standing around you while you're under these miserable conditions. I've actually done an autopsy in a barn before, believe it or not. And again, it was adjacent to a plane crash, and we had to do these in the space that we had available to us.
Wow.
And so in their examination, in their own language, this Dr. Joseph Woodward that actually did the autopsy, they wound up doing the autopsy on April 28th. Booth had, I think his date of death was actually April 26th. So 2 days later, they're having to cross all of this countryside to get to this warship that was out there. So what would happen is that you would get essentially two sawhorses. Okay. Everybody knows what a sawhorse is, right? You know, you cut wood on it. And in this environment, you take like an old door, and it's obviously off the hinges. Right. You lay the old door over the sawhorses and you have at it. You do your autopsy on the surface of an old door like that. And they're out on the deck of the ship and they're examining his body. And the things that he did confirm at autopsy is that, and this is a fascinating point here when we begin in forensics to talk about range of fire, the doctor in his own way actually said that this was an indeterminate range of fire, because he states in his examination that the projectile was fired from yards away. So how do you come to that conclusion? That means that you're not going to have stippling. You're not going to have powder deposition. He didn't see it. So he knew that it had to be yards away. And then you've got the circumstantial evidence of Corbett standing in that crack of the barn, or placing that gigantic pistol in the crack of the arm of the barn and firing that weapon. And that it actually penetrated the fourth cervical vertebra. And it cut through the muscle that kind of comes down off of the side of the neck and wraps around the clavicle. So if you can just envision this in your mind, that it's the round actually enters. If folks at home will just kind of imagine, if you'll find that bony protuberance on the back of your head, your occiput, and kind of go down about 4, maybe 3 inches down your neck, the backside of your neck, that's going to approximate the location where that round struck his body. It'll only be on the right side of the neck. And so it clipped also the fifth vertebra as well. He was able to determine the directionality, if you will. And this is interesting. It was kind of a downward trajectory. So when Corbett fired this round, it's traveling downward toward the target, and he's yards away with this thing. And, you know, pistols are not fantastically accurate, but he scored I think that he was probably aiming for the head and he hit the neck, but still, you know, when you look at it with a pistol shot, that's a pretty impressive shot. And so when it traverses through the neck, it actually exits out of the left side. And, you know, that's eventually what brought about his death. And, you know, the doctor had probably, they understood enough enough neuroscience at that point to understand that at certain points along, you know, the spinal column, if areas along there are clipped, it's going to, you know, impact your ability to move and those sorts of things. And they talked about how he went into a general paralysis, and also this area controlled the diaphragm, Dave. So right. the patient begins to suffer from this kind of shallow breathing, or the diaphragm will no longer work. The individual has to be manipulated and moved in order for them to take up just minimum amount of oxygen. And that's what they were faced with. And there were, you know, it was an unsurvivable wound, to say the very least. The fact that they were able to annotate this trauma and do it in such very exacting terms, which is fascinating to me, Dave, where they talk about this kind of area of hemorrhage. I would imagine that if you're talking about a 2-day ride, you've already got this blood. These vessels have been clipped in the spinal cord. You've got this kind of, it's not necrosis at this point. It's actually decomposition that's going on. And so at that level, and what they would have done is they would have gone in posteriorly, or anteriorly, after they got the organs of the neck, like the windpipe and everything, cleared out. They're taking out these vertebral bodies. They're going to take them out. They're going to clip them away. They're going to pull the whole thing out. And interestingly enough, they saved some of these specimens. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they can actually be viewed at the Mutter Museum, which is actually in Philadelphia, which is a fascinating place. It's all kinds of medical anomalies and all these sorts of things. Isn't that fascinating, though, that they were able to make this diagnosis? And as a matter of fact, compared to some of the autopsies that I read even today and reviewing all the cases that I do for our show and Nancy's show and all these other things, this was actually very well done. But a lot of that goes back to the War Department with Stanton. He wanted exactitude in this. He wanted everything to be confirmed. But, you know, at the end, what became of Wilkes's body is kind of fascinating. We had these great big old Springfield muzzle loading rifles, you know, that our guys used, and they're very heavy. And these things would come packed in a box, and they were kind of bracketed in there with these wooden brackets. They actually took a gun box. They didn't give him a coffin. They took an old gun box, wrapped his body. How appropriate is this? In an army blanket. In my day, when I was in the army blanket, I can't imagine it would feel any better, but they're wool.
Right.
They've got a big U.S. on them. That's how you had to tuck in your bed. And every trooper in the world was issued one of these things. They wrapped his body in an army blanket, put it inside of a gun box, and then took him, dug a big hole down underneath this facility, and dropped him in there, and then essentially covered it up. And that's where his body lay. This was actually at he was buried in the old penitentiary in the Washington Arsenal grounds. And you know, that was where he wound up coming to rest. But you know, the thing is, and I think I don't normally end shows this way, but I got to say, I think that looking back on this, and we talked about how these moments and times kind of converge, Dave. What John Wilkes Booth did to our country set our country back probably 150 years. And Abraham Lincoln was famous for, and again, I'm paraphrasing, so please forgive me, y'all. He said at one point in time, he wanted to extend mercy to all. Mercy to all. And it didn't matter, you know, what your station was. He wanted to heal the country. And the problem is that one person that was in the balance, that held everything in the balance, that wanted to extend mercy, he wanted the country to heal. That wound, any healing that had started with that one fired shot that night in Ford's Theater, ripped that wound to shreds and set us back years and years and years as we move forward. I'm Joseph Scott Morgan, and this is Body Bags. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.